Rena Strigel. Welcome to Ag Inspo, the podcast that focuses on innovation and creativity in agriculture. In my travels across the U.S., my mind is blown by the farmers, ranchers, and business owners who are contributing to the richness of the agricultural landscape. My hope is that by sharing their stories, you will be inspired to have the courage to break through and bring an idea you have to life. Welcome, everybody. I am really excited, as I am every single week, to introduce our very inspiring farm family. We are going to be talking with Jake and Laura from the McGreal Family Farm, which is located in Northeast Iowa, and they are specializing in 100% grass-fed beef, but they also have a lot of diversity in their operation in that they produce vegetables, herbs, maple syrup, fruit preserves, and handmade jewelry. So I think you're going to be really excited to see how these world travelers met each other and came together and now have been able to merge not only their love of travel, but their passion for farming. So without further ado, I'm really excited to have you meet Jake and Laura. So Laura, Jake, it is so nice to have you on the show today. I am super excited for you to be able to tell your story to our listeners. You just have so many interesting things that are all coming together in an amazing, innovative idea. Why don't you start by kind of telling our listeners a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background, and then tell us what you're up to today.
Okay, so Jake and I, well, first of all, I should say thank you so much for having us. We're really excited to be a part of this and to share our story. So Jake and I met in Dubuque at Loras College. I graduated in 2014 and Jake in 2013. And when I met Jake, I had no idea he was from a farm family. I grew up in the west suburbs of Chicago and pretty disconnected to food in general. Like, as a little kid, I would tell you that food came from the grocery store. But I don't know, Jake, if you want to fill in the blanks, because there's a lot.
So I grew up on a farm. My parents have been managing a cow-calf operation, beef cattle, for about 30 years now. And I actually grew up just down the road a couple miles from where we live now, which is my grandparents' house. They moved 2 years ago, they moved to a smaller apartment just for, you know, their convenience. And so this farm was just kind of open. It's in the family still. We don't own, we rent actually from my uncle, but it was in the family, but not really being used. And so we got the idea, well, you know, why don't we try our hand at farming and try some different things and see what we can learn and see what works. And yeah, that just kind of led to what we're doing now. The beef, we started up in conjunction with my parents. They would normally sell a crop of calves each year at about 6 months old. And we just are keeping some of those calves to finish out on grass and hay from our farm rather than selling them to someone else who would feed them corn. And yeah, we're doing some maple syrup. We do fruit preserves and jam, and we grew a garden last year. We're doing a lot of different things. It's kind of an approach, like an old fashioned approach, I guess. Like when I was growing up, my mom did a lot of canning and preserving. And so we're doing some of that, partly just to build our own skills and to learn some of those skills that are kind of being lost. Mm-hmm. And then partly just to share all those things, you know, at the markets that we go to.
Yeah. So tell me how, you know, that's kind of a big jump. So you're in college, you're young.
Yeah. I skipped like 5 years.
Yeah. And Laura, you had not been on the farm ever. So how did it come about that all of a sudden you're like, well, let's just go back to the farm and start doing all of these very unique things?
Yeah. So I guess my story. So I graduated in 2014 from Loras. And my junior year at Loras, I studied abroad in Spain. And I loved it. And so I knew that I wanted to work with children. And I knew I wanted to go back to Spain. So I decided to teach English in Spain. And I lived in Madrid for 1 year. And then when that was finished, I spent like 3 months backpacking Europe by myself. And then when I came home, I moved in with Jake in Denver, Colorado.
And 2015.
This is 2015. We weren't dating, but we were friends, I guess, from college. I was looking for a roommate who wasn't living with their parents. And so I found Jake. And this is the truth. This is how it happened.
We were more than friends by that point, but we were friends in college, and then we started to get to be more than friends, I guess. Like when you were in Spain, we started talking and communicating more. And
oh yeah, I skipped a major part. Jay came to get me. That's what happened. That's what happened. He flew to Spain and stayed with me at my apartment for a few weeks. That's a huge thing I didn't mention. And so when I was finishing up with my year at the school, yeah, we weren't dating, but we were more than friends. And I decided to move in with him in Colorado. And then, yeah, we lived there for 1 year. And then we worked in 2 years in Salt Lake City, Utah, doing a wilderness therapy program for at-risk youth.
For teenagers,
yeah. So it was kind of what it sounds like. So it was a residential treatment program for adolescents, but it was all done camping, nomadic backpacking, some primitive life skills,
cooking over
group
a fire,
therapy.
Yeah. Therapy and every activity. But it was just a lot of camping, cooking, cleaning, just doing things that we had to do to be able to live and get by out. You know, we would move. It was a nomadic program, so we would move our camp every day or every 2 days, and we would spend 8 days out in the field camping, and then we would have 6 days off
to travel.
Yeah, so we did a lot of traveling during
Wow.
that. We picked up rock climbing and
snowboarding.
We traveled a lot around the West while we were living out there, and we traveled Mexico and Guatemala and
India,
Brazil.
Yeah. So that schedule gave us so much flexibility. And so it paid us well enough to where we had really cheap rent living with a bunch of coworkers. And we had, if you took one shift off, we had 3 weeks. And so we spent a lot of time going abroad or going on long backpacking trips out West. Jake had a motorcycle and we did a big road trip from Denver up and around the Pacific Northwest into Canada. So we did a lot of things in a very short period of time.
And it was an exposure, maybe more for her than for me, to the outdoors, mm-hmm. but definitely building a connection with nature.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of transitioned into farming. And the food that we ate, we've started to become a lot more conscious of the food we were eating mm-hmm. also when we were out there, because we would have to pack our own food for 8 days out, you know, camping. We also would eat sometimes with the kids, but it was just kind of out of necessity that we became more focused on what we were eating. And so we got more picky, I think, with the food that we were eating, and a little bit more aware of how our diets were affecting our energy and our health and mm-hmm. our sleep and, you know, all of that stuff. So getting into producing some of our own food and doing things, you know, pasture raised, as organic as possible, we were kind of led into that too, kind of by the same mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is some connection. It feels like a stretch sometimes, but there is some sort of path that we went down.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So you're getting exposed to all this different food. You're getting exposed to different cultures. You're traveling. I'm assuming in all of this international travel, you're probably backpacking for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're really getting kind of into the culture from a not so much a tourist perspective, but you were actually going and sort of doing full immersions into where you were traveling.
We tried to the best we could. I think that's tricky. I think it's hard to do that, but we did the best we could and we were really frugal and yeah. And then I think, like Jake was saying, nature is what brought us back here. The opportunity, like there's so much privilege in having this land and Jake's family. And I think that with like a little bit of adventurous, like trial by fire mentality and like, oh, we really care about food. Let's fuse all of these things into a business.
Yeah, absolutely. So wonderful. Yeah. So you're out doing this rub and then you're like, let's go home and start a farm.
Yeah.
Well, me especially, we're looking to start a business. We didn't really know what type of business, but I have known for a long time that I wanted to be more self-sufficient, self-employed, to have more control over, you know, the operation, the work that I'm doing. And so that was another factor for me that made me really want to try, you know, getting this off the ground. There was a lot of things that we had to learn, you know, just trial by fire. We designed our own website. We, you know, had to create a logo and business cards, and we had to get all the licensing and insurance. You know, there's so many different things that go along with starting a business, and that was a really valuable experience for both of us, because we're both pretty independent people in our work and in our lives. So going forward, I think in the future, this business is probably going to change, you know, aspects of it will grow and go away, but building those skills is important to us.
Yeah. So are you raising beef in the same way that your parents raise beef, or do they have a different model for livestock production than what you've adopted?
It's very similar. So it's just a little bit more intentional. What we do is called management intensive rotational grazing, and we'll have a paddock set up with, you know, usually electric wires just that are easy to move from one place to the next. And we'll have our cattle in there for, you know, maybe 4 or 5 days at a time. And then they'll move into the next paddock. Mm-hmm. And that way they get the most nutritious parts of the grass. That, you know, they eat what they like the most and what's the best for them, and then they move on to the next spot, so they're not having to kind of clean up the scraps. And then it also helps the grass to come back faster, and you know, they're fertilizing the ground too. It's kind of a self-sustaining system.
Yeah,
and it seems to work the best. What my parents do with their herd of cows is basically the same, but it's just on a bigger scale. So they'll maybe move, instead of our group of 20, they'll have a group of 60 or 80 cows, and they'll move them into a big pasture for maybe 2 weeks until the grass looks like it's, you know, kind of getting a little thinner, and then they'll move on to the next. So it's the same type of thing. It's just on a little more of a management intensive scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what was the initial idea? Was the initial idea to produce beef, or were you thinking more along the lines of the vegetables and some of the other things that you do? Like, just talk about how your idea evolved. Where did you start and how did everything come about? Because now it sounds like this is pretty diversified, pretty robust. It's probably 365 now that you're doing so many cattle. So talk a little bit about the evolution of your idea.
Okay, so I was inspired by a book by Barbara Kingsolver. She's one of my favorite authors, called Animal Vegetable Miracle. I don't know if you're familiar
with it. I have read that. Yeah. Poison Wood Bible. Love that book.
Yeah, I love her. And just that really inspired me to go for kind of a holistic approach and being able to produce as much as you can with the space and land that you have. So we have chickens, so we were getting our eggs from our chickens. We had the beef cattle, so we were able to eat beef. After reading that book, I stopped eating just any chicken or just any pork. Like I got really picky,
as Jake was saying earlier. Things locally.
Yeah, more locally sourced, more intentional with the practices around the production. And so I guess the book inspired me to take that holistic approach of sourcing what you can from what you have. And then as far as diverse, well, we don't have to get into diversifying. I guess the beef is what was selling most. And it's also the strongest connection we have in terms of Jake's family's been doing this for how many years?
About 30 years. My parents have.
So we have mentors in that arena. I was interested in the community aspect of a CSA for a vegetable garden, but this was our first season, was last summer. And so we didn't want people to commit to something we didn't know if we could grow. So that was very much experimental. So the intention going in was always beef is going to be the star of the show. It's just a matter of what other things could make our table more interesting than just a cooler and a sign that says grass-fed beef.
Yeah.
And also we wanted to do these things for ourselves.
Right.
And like we wanted to have a vegetable garden, to have fresh vegetables for ourselves, mm-hmm. you know, and we wanted to try out our hand at, you know, making maple syrup or, you know, doing some preserves.
And canning.
So it's a lot of it's like, it's an opportunity for us to try something out and to get the produce, whatever it is that we're producing. And then we're able to pass along the excess to, yeah. to others. Mm-hmm. And our farmer's market booth has been pretty varied, you know, over it's a little over a year, I guess, now that we've been going to farmer's markets. Sometimes we have some woodworking projects that I've made. We'll have once in a while, like some dried apple leather snacks that, you know, we'll try out and see how it works. And yeah, like we'll bring different things. We're trying a lot of different things and hoping to kind of narrow later on.
So really you're kind of almost running like a test kitchen and you're doing test marketing, right? Like you're producing things to see what you like to do and then testing it in the marketplace to see what they may want to buy.
Right. Because ideally we would produce, let's say tomatoes, we produce them for ourselves and we'd make great salsa, which we love. And then we'd also sell that salsa. And so it's mutually beneficial. So that was the intent. And also like we really did want to keep the beef as, like I said, the highlight, and that's consistent every week. Mm-hmm. So our regular customers know that that's our thing, and mm-hmm. everything else is almost just part of the aesthetic of the booth and just kind of shows that we don't just have beef cattle. We have this philosophy around living off our land.
Yeah, definitely.
Showing that at our booth. Mm-hmm. And like you said, testing the market.
Yeah. So now take me a little bit further into your thinking, because I know that you're now working on the next evolution of creating community around food. So talk a little bit about where you're at today and what you're working on.
So we're currently attending the winter market in Dubuque. We go every Saturday. We started that last
February.
So it's been about a year we've been doing the farmers market, and that has really grown for us. We've got a lot more regulars now than when we started, and just the traffic, the people that we interact with every week, it seems like it just grows every week. And so that's been really promising. And we do want to continue to provide, you know, the produce and things that we're selling at market now. But over the course of the last year, we've really seen how successful and popular food trucks are mm-hmm. at the markets that we attend. And thinking about it more, you know, we thought, well, boy, that could really be valuable to our business, because we have the advantage that we produce a lot of the ingredients ourselves already. And we're already attending markets where we have rapport with customers. it's really, I think, just the next logical step for us in being able to reach more people, you know, expanding the niche that we have, the grass-fed beef, because it is still kind of a niche market.
It is, so, yeah.
So providing a meal to people that maybe have never even tried grass-fed beef before, and being able to provide something that they'll feel good about eating, you know, building that connection between the farmer and the consumer. It just seems like that it's the next step. And I think it could really open up a whole new arena for our business moving forward.
Yeah. And I know you've got an idea for sort of the bent of it. So I believe you want to do a Cuban, is it Cuban fusion or Cuban period?
I think Cuban fusion, because I guess my grandparents, people look at me and they don't assume I'm Cuban or Hispanic at all. But my grandparents on my mom's side are from Cuba. And I currently, while I'm in graduate school, am splitting time between Chicago and Northeast Iowa. Mm-hmm. So when I'm in Chicago, I stay with my grandma, who's from Cuba. And so if there's anything I learned from that side of the family, it's the idea of having your own business. My grandpa was a doctor and he had a family practice. And he really got into being a doctor in a neighborhood that was becoming much heavier, predominantly Spanish speaking. And so he was able to meet a need both for people's physical health and linguistically. And I was very much raised culturally Cuban. And I grew up bilingual, and that's just been such a big part of my life that it just so happens that beef is huge in Cuban dishes. And so the idea was, yes, beef is this main part of Cuban cuisine, but how am I going to source the other ingredients that go into Cuban food, like yuca or plantains? Like, I'm not going to grow those things, or even lemons and limes. I'm not going to grow those in Iowa. So the fusion aspect is that it won't remain authentically Cuban, but the spices, the feel, the flavor can be.
Right.
So that's kind of the idea. We also just found that it was unique. We don't see Cuban food in Iowa.
And it's something that I think people would really enjoy around here too, because it, even though it is, there are different flavors and different spices, it seems to me kind of like home style cooking, like what
meat
I grew
potatoes.
Up on. Yeah, it's a lot. Yeah, exactly. It's hearty food, mm-hmm. pretty simple ingredients, but you know, just good soul food, I guess. But it's not something I think that most people, if you ask them, you know, tell me one Cuban dish. I don't know if most people in Iowa would be able to name one. Honestly, I probably couldn't have before I met.
Probably not, but I think the nice thing about Iowans is that we are very curious about food. Like, we like to try new things, and we like the exposure to, you know, different ways of seasoning things. And if it has meat in it, I mean, you pretty much got Iowans like right from the get-go. It's like, meat? Okay, I'll try that.
Yeah, I feel badly generalizing about a whole state like this too. But we looked up before our pitch at the Young Farmer Conference if there was any other Cuban restaurant in Iowa. And there was one in Des Moines. It appears to be closed. So yeah, like all of those things. Kind mm-hmm. of. And really, it's fusing our two worlds, because we do come from different backgrounds, and it gives us the opportunity to combine them and diversify this business model.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's fabulous. So is this next season when you are planning to launch, or are you a little bit further out than that?
We're a little further out than that still. So we did win $2,500 at the Grow Your Future Award. Our budget for getting the truck up and running, you know, equipment and licensing and stuff, is about $15,000. So we're still coming up with the last part of the funds to get there. And also, we're just kind of limited with time that we have to invest
oh.
at this point.
Yeah.
She's back and forth, and I'm getting ready for maple syrup season, and every month or every week there's something else. So I'm thinking it's probably going to get pushed out till like next fall, next winter, when we have a little more time to plan for the next summer.
Yeah. I can only imagine how busy you are, because I mean, are you calving right now too?
Not yet. It'll be coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah. So you've got all these things. So talk a little bit about the maple syrup. Are you sourcing that from trees on your property, or are you?
Yeah. Well, it's on my parents' property. They've got an area with a lot of maple trees, fairly easily accessible, and they've never tapped any trees in that area before. When I was growing up, we would tap maybe a dozen or 15 trees just kind of around the house. My parents have some timber just out back. And so we would tap a few trees and do, you know, maybe a few gallons of syrup per year. Last year was the first year that we did it on more of a commercial scale. We tapped about 80 trees, and last year it was fairly brute force, I guess, method. I was out. We just had 5-gallon buckets at the trees, and so I would go out each day and empty all the buckets and transport it back to our evaporator, a wood-fired evaporator that we had cooking. And so it was a lot of legwork. This year, we're upgrading. We've got a lot of hoses and some new tanks and things set up. So we'll have most of our sugar bush gravity-fed now down into kind of a central storage, and that'll save us a lot of time this year. It'll be and just trying to get around in the winter and the snow. It was kind of hard last year at certain times in the mud, trying to even get to the taps, to the woods to get the sap. So this year it's we invested quite a bit in, you know, supplies and equipment, but we're a lot better set up. I think this year we'll be able to be a lot more efficient, and we'll be able to tap a few more trees too, I think, than we did last year.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about how you're learning all of this. I mean, obviously you've got, kind of coaches and mentors in your parents, but you know, all of this other stuff, it sounds like you're probably pulling recipes together from your grandparents' side of the family. And some of this is just maybe going out and having to learn it all on your own. So what would you say has been some of the biggest challenges in coming back home and, you know, starting all of this, you know, kind of as a first generation endeavor?
Well, I can speak to just coming to, I've never lived anywhere rural. So I sometimes in Utah, when I worked out there, my friends would joke that I was a suburban diva. But really, I mean, I don't consider myself high maintenance at all. But I did have to adjust to needing to drive places and just a limited selection of different stores and
groceries or clothing stores, for example. What's offered around here is pretty basic. To get much of a selection, you have to drive a ways.
So that sounds like a very materialistic struggle, but I can't deny that it didn't happen. And also just feeling like I'm from such a big place where I'm used to feeling anonymous. And so the idea that everyone is watching me is something I was afraid of.
Like everyone will know.
Everyone will know who I am.
Small town environment.
Yeah. Kind of thing. And I was just afraid to make connections. And that's something, I'm very extroverted. Like I'm in a graduate program for social work. I have these ideals of being so community involved. And it was hard starting somewhere new like this, where I didn't have a group of friends that I already knew. Everything was fresh. And
it was so, like, everyone else knew each other and you were the one person that, you know, kind of wasn't from there.
I mean, maybe it was more just my own anxiety being in a really small place. So,
and I guess I was maybe a little bit of a help, but I didn't really have the same feelings because I, growing up here, is everything was familiar to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like learning how to drive on gravel was definitely challenging at first, and worrying about hitting deer. I mean, just things that I wouldn't have thought would be challenges. And even saying them out loud, it doesn't seem like any of this would be a big deal. But
well, I do have to ask you, have you gone in the ditch yet?
No, I haven't.
On the gravel?
I haven't. I've come close.
Okay, well then you're doing really good. I think you have passed gravel 101 if you haven't gotten sucked into the ditch on a soft side. So,
but yeah, all of these are such small things. I would say business-wise, my biggest challenge was just having confidence, enough confidence to put myself out there. Like, here I am on Facebook, here I am now on a podcast, here I am in this newspaper article, and just this fear of rejection or a fear that I won't be able to portray myself the way I want to be seen. Just wondering what will people think. And
it's like once you release your business to the world, then it's, I don't know, it's kind of like it's out there then, and you lose a little bit of control over mm-hmm. how people are gonna perceive it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a vulnerable thing. It's part of you that you're offering to people, and you hope that they accept it and appreciate what you're doing.
So, well, yeah. And I think probably for you guys, it's very personal too, because everything that you are putting out there for consumption has taken a lot of effort and a lot of learning and a lot of care to be able to put that forward. So I can definitely see where that would feel very vulnerable, because it's not just that they're criticizing you, but they're criticizing something that you've spent so much time to produce and package for them.
Yeah.
So I can definitely see where that would be something to overcome for sure.
That's definitely the biggest thing for me. I don't know, Jake, if you feel differently, but now that I'm out there, opportunities keep coming and I'm kind of riding the wave, and and I feel less nervous, you know, about putting myself out there. And that feels really good. And I have received so much support even through this Grow Your Future Award, through the online voting. I mean, people that I haven't spoken to in a very long time came out and showed a lot of support. And my family, who has absolutely no context for agriculture, has been really supportive. And they actually think this is really cool. And they don't feel like they have to worry about me.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say, I think it's an ongoing process of like self-awareness and making sure our farm philosophy is in tune with our own values. And that will be ongoing, but the fear of making a mistake, or I don't know, that fear of rejection is really the strongest. And I feel like I am slowly overcoming that.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah. The feedback that we've gotten, the support we've gotten from people has really kept us going, you know, kept us optimistic about the future.
So what are you loving most about your business right now? What aspects of it like bring you the most joy?
Honestly, the farmer's market I've really grown to love. At first, so I'm kind of introverted. We're kind of opposites, honestly, in a lot of ways. I'm not overly outgoing, and so the farmer's market at first was challenging. Not that it was really hard in the moment, but I would just feel so exhausted afterward. And it was like it was a battle kind of in my head. I was thinking, what's the best way to approach people? How pushy, you know, can you be or should you be? And that actually has become one of my favorite parts of it. Just connecting with people, the conversations that I have, you know, I meet new people every week. And I meet people, or I run into people every week that have been buying from us now for a while. And it's really uplifting. So I've really grown to enjoy that.
And I think for me, it's two things. First, it's the creativity, the fact that I run our social media. And so I can't control everything, but I can definitely present our business the way I want to present it. And also the autonomy is huge, being able to make our own decisions and kind of filter them through, like I was saying before, our own philosophy or values has really been a success.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Out of curiosity, how big is your garden?
I think it's about a quarter acre. I haven't calculated it out exactly, but I think it's like 140 feet long and like 35 feet deep. It's kind of just a big rectangular plot. And we completely filled it last year. We planted some of everything. It seems like we planted some flowers. We planted cauliflower, broccoli, beans, tomatoes, peppers.
Cucumber, onion.
Yeah, we did some of everything. And it was really a learning experience because I pulled a lot of weeds, you know, when I was younger, out of my mom's garden. But I was definitely underestimating the amount of time and energy that it was going to take to just to keep ahead of everything. So it worked out pretty well. We, you know, almost everything, you know, we harvested. The onions were kind of a failure, but
beets were also a failure.
We got some beets, but yeah, it was an interesting learning experience. This year, we're going to be much more informed, and I think we'll be coming into it with the knowledge to make it go a little smoother. But yeah, that was a big undertaking.
Yeah, and being able
and
to grow
really
to
make
the
us
menu.
Very much money.
Yeah, no, it didn't make us any money, but it was knowledge.
Yeah.
And we had all the vegetables we could possibly, yeah, you know, which is nice.
Yeah. So do you have plans to expand any aspect of your business this year?
I think more
upgrade than expand. Mm-hmm. So like we need to upgrade our farmer's market canopy. And we need to get better tables and little details, I think, need to upgrade. We just upgraded the maple syrup system so that it's more efficient. Yeah.
Our website, we want to do an overhaul and make it more of like a central theme. Because we've just done everything ourselves on WordPress. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I'm pretty happy with the content that we have on there. But I think it could be aesthetically improved, and we want to add the ability to pick out and reserve an order online. That's something that we sort of have available now. We have like a Google form that you can fill out and make a request, but we want to streamline the process and make it just more valuable and easy to navigate for anybody that might come across it.
Yeah. So Laura, you said you were getting your master's in social work. What do you hope to do with an advanced degree and your farm?
Yeah. So I'm actually specializing in school social work. So I have a lot of experience with children, mostly teenagers, and that's the population I'm passionate about working with. So my thought would be that it might, you know, having summers free in a school setting and having that community connection of a school and kind of using the garden potentially for more than just a garden, for more of an experience. And then also having a schedule that is friendly to farming, because if I'm not mistaken, it was an animal vegetable miracle that Barbara Kingsolver spoke to the fact that the reason we have summers off was for agriculture, so kids could go home and work on their farms. So I'm now an adult who is very extroverted. I think I need to work off the farm. It suits me. Mm-hmm. But then being able to come back to it and have it in my free time.
And possibly to bring people here as well, to have events on the farm, to, you know, share knowledge to, we've got a significant amount of space here. The house that we live in is very big for the two of us.
Yeah.
And then we also have a cabin that has a fire pit, and it's off grid, I guess, but it's a nice little gathering place where we could hold events, or we've talked about doing something like a camp for kids in the area that would want to learn about gardening or maple syrup or anything else that we do around the farm. And then also with our experience in wilderness therapy, we've got a whole arsenal of different therapeutic groups or activities, things that we've done, you know, to spark a conversation. Yeah, outdoor skills, mm-hmm. survival type skills too.
But I want to say that this is way down the road because, right, like food truck is, that's where we're headed. I feel we have a lot of dreams and we're very visionary. And I think that's just us being adventurous and valuing self-development. And so that translates into the business. So we have goals to just keep growing and merging my social work degree with agriculture. So it's all connected. And I think for some people, it might overwhelm them, like how many ideas we have. But there is a general
like a bigger path vision.
And a big vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The steps we take to get there aren't clear necessarily at this point. But
Yeah, I think that that's amazing. And I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, and you know, they say that in the world of entrepreneurs, about 50% of entrepreneurs are very visionary people. Like they have so many ideas that they kind of blow themselves out of traditional jobs because they just can't find a place for those ideas to live. And then the other 50% are people that are good entrepreneurs because they have the ability to put processes in place and they can take an idea, you know, calmly to market, and they can create systems and processes around it. So it doesn't surprise me at all, you know, with all the ideas that but you're in the channel, definitely. And one of the things that I heard recently is that we as human beings tend to get into thinking about that it should be one thing or the other. And she was really challenging people to think about creating a mosaic, meaning that lots of different things can fit together into a path to create this very vibrant sort of quilt, rather than limit ourselves to, well, we're beef producers or we're vegetable or we're this or we're that, but to create these mosaics. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing with your business, is you're finding all these lovely things that can plug into a central theme to merge, you know, the lifestyle that you want with the passions that you have for production and for just helping a community remain healthy. So yeah. It sounds like, intentionally or not intentionally, that is exactly what you are creating for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think we've gotten some feedback, like you need to narrow your ideas down. And I am a firm believer that maybe half of the things I speak about right now will fall off the table next year. But I think that there's definitely value in having an open mind, because I really just think you can never be prepared for the opportunities that might present themselves. And yeah, I think as long as we keep working hard and pursuing the ideas that we have and that we like best to the best of our ability, we'll be rewarded.
Yeah. Yeah. So just out of curiosity, like the land that you have, it sounds like you've got a lot of biodiversity in your land. What do you hope that you will, you know, increase your cattle herd to with the grazing style of grazing that you want to do? How many cattle can you sustain in your current farming operation?
It's a good question. We've got a lot of room for expansion, and I think moving forward, my parents would like to convert more of their business over to finishing on grass, and they could maintain a much smaller herd if they were doing that. It would be more intentional and they would be getting more of a premium for the product. So I think, I don't know, it would be possible for us to get up to maybe 100 head a year.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're a ways away from that as far as our just logistically, mm-hmm. you know, being able to get there, but it's definitely growing. There's some, you know, things we're still working out, freezer space and storage, mm-hmm. how to keep things in stock year round, you know, during the busiest parts of the summer where everyone's grilling. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, this time of the year when our cows are not gaining very much, they don't have the fresh grass and it's kind of cold, so they're burning more calories. So this time of the year, we don't want to, if we can, you know, get things taken to the butcher. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of, yeah, it's a process trying to meet that changing demand different times of the year. And, but so far it's been manageable, I guess. We started last year, we had 8 head of cattle that we sold out either at market or quarters, like bulk mm-hmm. sales off the farm. And then this year we have 20, and I think we're on pace.
Yeah.
So far this year, since New Year's, we've been doing just stellar at market. And so the way we're going now, we're on pace to sell those 20, I think, this year. And so we'll have to see how this year goes and, you know, what we'll want to do for next year. But really, my parents, we're doing it kind of in partnership with them. And so there's a mutual benefit for them. They're happy to convert more of their operation over to doing grass-fed as we, you know, find success in the marketing and
yeah.
build up our customer base.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's really great. So yeah. what kind of a draw does your farmers market get? Because you're near Dubuque, correct?
Yeah, we're not in Dubuque County, but this was partially me because we went to college in Dubuque. I felt really comfortable there and we had some connections there. So that's why we chose Dubuque. And then were you curious about the type of customer?
Well, I'm just kind of wondering like how big is your sort of reach right now in terms of mm-hmm. where you're finding your markets?
Oh, I see. I would say Northeast Iowa and Des Moines, actually. We've done a few deliveries to Des Moines. And then there's a growing market in Chicago as well. So we don't have any intentions right now to ever ship across the country. We want to keep it relatively local. I justify Chicago because I go back and forth anyway for school. So it's actually really convenient. And a lot of my family is ordering from me now too. So I can just send a text that I'm going and gather some orders and then drive home with some meat.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of potential in Chicago. We've been able to get rid of most of it here in Northeast Iowa. Wouldn't you say? Yeah.
Yeah. The Dubuque market is one of better attended markets in the area. Cedar Rapids is good as well. But as for us, Dubuque is the biggest one that's within, you know, pretty easily drivable distance. Mm-hmm. I'm not actually sure how many people come through like the summer market on a typical Saturday, but it's much bigger than the farmers markets that are around, say in Elkader, Strawberry Point. A lot of the little towns around our area have farmers markets. And we would like to get into those markets more, but it's tough. It's just the two of us for one thing. We don't have any employees. So one Saturday market is pretty much all we can do. And starting out, we just wanted to try and make our time as valuable as possible mm-hmm. and try to see as many people as we could on a market day. So Dubuque has worked really well for us in that regard. I think as we move forward, we were saying with the food truck, that could help us make more connections locally and offer more.
Absolutely. So, you know, talk a little bit about what you would say as far as advice to people who are sitting, you know, maybe they're on a farm, maybe they're wishing they were back on the farm, or, you know, they're looking at doing some diversification in their existing operation. So you guys have done the School of Hard Knocks, so that makes you qualified to get advice. So what would you say, you know, give a couple of top tips for people who are thinking about, like, I'd like to convert some over to grass-fed, or I'd like to do some different kinds of produce, or just what would be your top tips for people who are thinking about either coming into agriculture or diversifying in some way?
So for me, the biggest thing that I did not do last winter and drove me crazy was trust in the process and realize that it is a process. Like an idea is just an idea at the beginning, but it seems like 3 months go by and you look back and realize all that you've accomplished. So last winter, the process was very much, okay, we're doing this. Let's start a Facebook page. Let's make an Instagram account. Let's get licensed to sell meat. Let's get licensed to warehouse meat. Let's have a conversation with Jake's family to see like what kind of agreement we can come to so that it's fair and lucrative for both of us. And then all of a sudden it was February and we were in front of customers. And so winter last year seemed to just drag out and I just had no faith that we would ever actually be doing this. And my advice would be to A, reflect on your successes, however small they may be, and B, just trust that if you're passionate about something and you are actively working towards it, your idea will come to fruition. That's my advice.
I would say definitely look for resources. There's so many groups, there's grants, there's all kinds of things out there for people who are looking to start any sort of business, really. There's somebody else that's done that or done something similar. Mm-hmm. And most times I would say those people are very willing to, you know, help you out, give you some advice, you know, support you in that way. So I'd say look for the resources that are out there and available for you. And there's just, I think out of necessity, there's going to be a period of time where you're going to be putting in a lot of work and you don't know whether it's going to pay off. Mm-hmm. And it may even seem like it's, you know, it's a waste of time. But I think if you keep at it and you really do your best, you know, you give it your all, you do it the best you can, chances are you're going to find some success. You'll have some wins that will, you know, keep you going, mm-hmm. give you the courage to keep pushing on. And yeah, I guess just don't give up too quickly. I'd also say, I guess, don't beat a dead horse. You know, if it's really not working, then know when to cut and run. But it's going to take time. And you're not always going to have the confidence and the security that things are going to work out, but you just got to push through because the reward, I think, is worth the means.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned getting help and resources. Where were some of the places that you found to be particularly helpful?
Okay, so my first resource, I took a farm business class exactly for people who wanted to start a farm. And that was at the Cincinnati Mound, which is just across the border, across the Mississippi in Wisconsin. And so that class, it was free. It helped me network and connect with other farmers, swap emails, which is another part of the advice is to network because that opportunity led me to meet another vendor at the Dubuque Farmers Market who I have connections with. So I would say I started there. We got involved through the Dubuque Extension Office and attended networking events. We joined Practical Farmers of Iowa and attended a conference there last year. And then this year we did the Young Farmer Conference with the Farm Bureau. So I do believe in diversifying, you know, even if in terms of your resources, like if you think something might not apply to you, you still might meet someone who knows someone that went to church with someone. I mean, you just never know where the connections will lead. So those were the main resources I used to get started. And then more recently, we were involved to participate in a very small local producer network that is looking to support each other and collaborate within a 25 mile radius of our farm.
Oh, wow.
They're putting together kind of a reference of the producers in the area and what they produce so that people in this area can just be more aware, I guess, of what's available. And I think it's part of the local food movement as well, trying to get more of your produce locally if possible.
Yeah, and all of those organizations that I mentioned have different field days and farm visit days and tours that we've kind of done on other farms to gather inspiration. I think I didn't listen to very many podcasts. I read books and gathered information there.
A lot of YouTube and Googling, like
self-taught.
We need to make a business logo, like, you know, how can we do that? Yeah, there's a lot of resources online for, I don't know, we really did a lot of our, you know, a lot of research into different things because we were doing a lot of it ourselves and trying to save as much money as we could.
But I would say, like, just other small farms doing similar things for not only their knowledge, but also the support network. So we have two other small farms in our county that are also doing really intentional farming. And we spent a lot of time with them last winter and we're really inspired by their models. They've been doing this longer than us. And this whole idea of collaborating and networking, and that's a resource in and of itself, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a really amazing trend that's kind of happening in a lot of different industries, is that we don't view each other as competition, but we actually view each other as collaborators and neighbors. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think we're starting to have that neighbor feeling come back to agriculture a little bit.
Yeah.
Where we're not just competing for resources all the time. We're actually kind of here to support each other. And
Yeah,
I think that's a great thing.
I think it's amazing.
Yeah, and there's so much out there that we haven't tapped into. It seems like every time we meet with someone, they share a new resource. And I think eventually we could add more to our, you know, our pool of resources. But
yeah,
you never know when that flash of inspiration is going to come. And it seems like it comes more often from other people than just, organically.
Yeah, it's amazing how much I've learned from doing podcasting that, you know, translates back to my own business. Like I had a podcast yesterday and interviewed somebody that she gave me advice on my business. And I was like, okay, that's awesome. I actually got some coaching for doing podcasts. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. So I think any way that we can make community and support each other, I think it's a wonderful thing. I don't see any downside to any of that. So it's neat that you're finding that community of people who are there to support, because we definitely all need neighbors.
Yeah. And they're there, you know, we moving back here. Honestly, I didn't know like what kind of a community we would find. Most of the people that I went to high school are not around anymore, or if they are, you know, a lot of people I haven't been in contact with for years. So I didn't know, you know, and being in a rural area, you know, who we would find to add to our, you know, our community, but there are lots of people out there. If you do some looking, you're bound to find people that are, you know, similar to you, that, you know, that will uplift you and will gain something from your experiences as well.
Yeah. Well, this has been awesome, you guys. I'm so excited to hear, you know, everything that's going on and how much has happened to you in this journey in such a short amount of time. Like, you've just really made you put a lot of miles in, and it's only been, this is going to be what, your third growing season or your second growing season?
Second.
Yeah, you guys are already starting to sound like old pros. Like, yeah, we've been doing this. We know everything. We got this.
Yeah. It's exciting to think about, you know, where we could be in another 3 years after what we've seen, we've been able to accomplish in a year and a half.
Yeah. Well, it's just amazing. And I wish you nothing but the best. So if people want to follow you, connect with you, like start stalking you for that food truck and like starting to, you know, fan mob you around the launch date of that, how would they connect with you, follow you? Go ahead and give us your credentials And what we'll do is we'll make sure that that's in the show notes as well. So if people are driving, don't freak out trying to grab a pen. We'll have it in the show notes where you can just pause and go out there and connect with them directly. But go ahead and tell us how we can connect with you.
So our website is just McGreelFamilyFarm.com, and McGreel is McGreal. And then that is also our handle, McGreel Family Farm, on Instagram and Facebook.
Okay, excellent.
So Instagram is my favorite tool. So I update that the most frequently. And yeah, so if you're into Instagram, I recommend the Instagram. The Facebook is more sharing, I think, other things that are going on. And Instagram is more like our story.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent. Well, again, I appreciate your time so much. Thank you for sharing your story. And like I said, all the very best. Looking forward to seeing you guys in Des Moines soon.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for your time.
This is Rena Strigel, and you have been listening to Ag Inspo, the podcast. Please visit my website at tomorrowiscoming.com and find me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. If you haven't yet, please go to iTunes and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another inspirational episode where you will hear from another amazing entrepreneur who has had the courage to break through and bring an idea to life.